This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, as many of us had thought and indeed predicted, Boris Johnson is in trouble. It's deep trouble, it's with his own party, and it looks like some of his old friends are turning against him as well. And we're joined now from London by Chris Johns. Chris, of course, former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland, now a political commentator, and also somebody with his own podcast with Jim Power, two really good economists. It's called The Other Hand, and it's doing really well. And we're very happy to alert you to the fact that it's up there. Chris, thank you very much for joining us. Boris Johnson last night in a five-hour cabinet meeting, it was scheduled to be a weekend away at Chequers, but that didn't happen. And Rishi Sunak doing the media rounds saying they have to get their act together. And the sleaze that has surfaced is really very difficult for Boris to avoid. In fact, a former girlfriend of his, Petronella Wyatt, he lied to Michael Howard, the former Tory party leader, about that affair and lost his job as a result. One of many jobs he lost, or a number of jobs, for lying and otherwise devious behaviour. She has come out and said, Chris, that I always thought it would be sleaze rather than sex that would get Boris. And, of course, in today's Spectator, Fraser Nelson, the editor of that, well, you'd call it the Conservatives' House magazine, has suggested that Johnson has lost his party and his MPs. Chris, this is a very serious development. It dates back to that sleaze row last week. How does it look from where you are?
It's looking very bad for Johnson right now. Maybe that's motivated reasoning on my part. In a way, as you know from everything I've said about him in the past, I think that this he's getting his just desserts. But the number of fronts in which he's having to fight now suggests to me that he's in a spot of bother. You talked about one Spectator journalist, Fraser Nelson, there. There's another who writes as well as the Spectator, he writes columns for the London Times every Friday, a guy called James Forsyth, who knows Johnson and that whole political clan very, very well. And he's written a couple of pieces, one in the wake of the scandal last week and today, about the levelling up agenda. And they're on the attack. This is the really interesting thing about these people. And Forsyth is obviously very well briefed. So if we just go back for a second to that fateful vote, which was an attempt to get Owen Paterson off the hook.
Yes.
Forsyth has been speaking to MPs. This is what he does. He's the political editor of The Spectator. And he said there were 252 votes for the motion to vindicate Owen Paterson. He said there were 12 Tory ultras that believed in what they were doing that night. And there were 240, all of whom wanted to be somewhere else.
Yes.
And I think this speaks to one aspect of this crisis for Johnson, is that he's really, really annoyed his backbenchers. And it speaks to the relationship that he has with his backbenchers, which is not one of loyalty or friendship or cozying up to them in the tea rooms of the Commons. It's purely transactional. and he's let them down on this transaction.
There's just to say that Brexit is what they joined each other for, and there is a group known as the Spartans who will, in exchange for their desire that Brexit was done, will defend Johnson, one imagines, to the death. The Owen Paterson scandal, a former Secretary for Northern Ireland and a long-time MP, 23 years, a hard-right MP. Just to remind ourselves, this man took, in over a period of 5 years, £500,000 to lobby for a company that was doing business in Northern Ireland. He was really asking questions and lobbying for cash, which is a breach of the Commons rules. He was as guilty as hell. And when Johnson looked like he would lose this guy and the vote, he abolished the whole system. That's effectively what he and Jacob Rees-Mogg did, who's the leader of the House, of course.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people, of course, have asked, just why did Johnson do this? Why did he behave in the way that he did? And lots of people have got lots of different theories. But it seems to have been best summed up for me by an ex-Tory MP, actually, Matthew Paris, who suggested in the last few days two possible theories as to why Johnson tried to get Paterson off the hook. The first one was a sort of kinder, a more human interpretation of Johnson's behaviour, actions, in that Paris says that it was the sinner's horror of moralising and judgment. And yes, when you're as big a sinner as Johnson, you really have a big horror of anybody else falling victim to moralising judgment, because you kind of sort of worry that it may be heading your way as well.
Yes.
And he also, within this, said that he was probably heavily influenced by that infamous dinner he had at the Garrick Club,
yes,
with Charles Moore, ex-editor of the Telegraph, who is one of, if he was a backbench Tory MP, he would be one of the Spartans. He is certainly a Tory Brexit ultra, who would have stiffened Johnson's backbone when it came to the Paterson affair, because these people have circled the wagons and they were seen to be defending, in their eyes, one of their own. Now, that's the kindest thing that Matthew Paris, this ex-Tory MP, now a writer, could come up with. And the not-so-kind interpretation of Johnson's actions, and it's the one that Paris clearly believes to be the case, is as follows. And he described, this is me quoting now, not my words, these are Paris's words, is that Johnson is an utter cad, a moral vacuum, stranger to loyalty, probity, and friendship.
Yes.
And this is what you get. And he goes on to say, from Johnson's every engagement with real human beings, somebody emerges broken, and it's never Johnson.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes, and there is another big story that broke this week about a former Tory Attorney General, Geoffrey Cox, who is an MP, and he's been spending most of his time in the Cayman Islands, and in one instance has represented tax avoidance merchants who were being sued by the British government. And he was an MP representing a case, or presenting a case, against the British government. But it emerges that he has made over 5 million sterling since he's been in the House of Commons, which goes back to 2006. He represented the Tory government when they went to the Supreme Court trying to prorogue Parliament, you might remember. He led that case. And he is now in the dock along with Johnson. And of course, the question they always ask in media and politics, is this cutting through? Is it getting to the public? And there is opinion poll evidence that yes, it is cutting through.
That's right. See, the most latest opinion poll that I've seen, it puts Labour 2 percentage points ahead of the Conservatives, actually, which I think is the first time that's happened in a very long time. The issue with Geoffrey Cox, I think, speaks to a much wider problem that has been created. And that point about it cutting through has been asked many, many times recently, particularly in the last few days. And it also raises the question of the quality of the opposition, the Labour Party, albeit that they now seem to be doing better in the polls. Because the lies and corruption of this administration have been exposed, not just this week, but for a long time. One of the peculiarities of Britain at the moment is that there's a sort of a feeling that Johnson has only just been elected. I think it must be the sort of compression of time thanks to the pandemic. But this parliament's, if it's a normal parliament, it's half over. He's only got 2 years left. And so that's one issue. But the lies and corruption of Johnson don't just go back over the last week since the Paterson affair. They've been going on for a very, very long time. And, as I think it was The Economist this week, nobody voted Johnson in expecting anything else other than what has actually happened. And that's the cutting through point. And there's a very well-known legal commentator over here. I think he's the FT's legal correspondent, and he also writes in his own capacity, called David Alan Green. Well worth a look from time to time about what he's saying about these sorts of things. And he points out that the lies and the corruption have been going on for quite some time. And so the role of opposition is twofold, is to keep exposing the lies, but if they're front and center, then we are no longer surprised by them. The second role of opposition, of the Labour Party, this is what Keir Starmer clearly is trying to do and needs to do a much better job on, is get enough people to care, get it to cut through.
Yes.
Now, and this speaks to a deeper issue about why it isn't cutting through. We need to ask that question. And Alan Green, from this legal perspective, I think is really, really interesting and captures just what's been going on over the last few years in the UK, in which he talks about the Great British Unwritten Constitution. Now, any constitution, a lawyer will tell you, requires the rule of law, accountability, and checks and balances. And for these to work, the constitution, whether written or unwritten, requires legitimacy. And the whole point about the Boris Johnson project and the Tory ultras and the media have been those assaults on the fabric of that unwritten UK constitution, on its very legitimacy. And that's all that stuff that you mentioned a little bit earlier, that starts with the proroguing of Parliament, the constant lying to Parliament, the threats to the judiciary, the lying to the Queen, the threats to the BBC. Yes. All that does, it weakens the very fabric of your policy, of your constitutional arrangements. And what that means, what that brings out, is that instead of hiding in the shadows, all of these gangster characters practicing their skullduggery, which of course is always present in human affairs, it's present in every country, but it's where it's present and whether that question again is cutting through. It all can all be conducted in the open now, because the constitutional polity is so weakened. And relatedly, so few people care because it's all been normalized.
Well, you see, this is the link to Donald Trump. Trump famously said he could walk out onto Fifth Avenue from Trump Towers, he could shoot somebody dead, and nobody would touch him. And it is true that the Trumpian thing is everyone knows what he is, but it doesn't matter. They're voting against something else, and they're voting for a character that they can somehow identify with. There's a number of things that should be mentioned here. First of all, his rank incompetence and his refusal to work. There's a woman called Nazarene Zakari Ratcliffe, who is an Iranian married to a Londoner who went on hunger strike and has been on hunger strike for 2 weeks. She was arrested when she traveled to see her parents in Iran. And it was at the time that Boris Johnson was foreign secretary. And in an attempt, he thought, to assist her case, he said that, in fact, she wasn't a spy, she was a journalist. In fact, she wasn't a journalist, she was a teacher. And that was in the brief he'd been given by his civil servants, but he didn't read the brief. And of course, a journalist and journalists in general have often been spies. One example of his incompetence, the other of his arrogance, this week, he was in a hospital and he was asked 3 times to wear a mask. And he didn't. Put it on and took it off again. So he's out of control, clearly. The question is, can the Tories put manners on him, or is he now becoming a liability? And the other question, of course, Chris, and this is what's really serious and why we're doing this, is the Northern Ireland Protocol and his alliance with Lord Frost, formerly David Frost, who couldn't get elected and didn't bother trying, so Johnson put him in the Lords. He's threatening Europe, and Europe and Ireland are going to have to fight back. And the relationship with Dublin is the worst it's been since Margaret Thatcher's time. We could be facing here serious trouble in this country for Johnson.
Yes, it can be said in so many different ways. And one of the best phrases that I've seen used about the Paterson episode in particular, but more generally about Johnson, was written by The Economist, in which it said that the tawdry episode adds to a pattern set by the government of Boris Johnson. Having strode victorious into Downing Street as one of the architects of Brexit, the Prime Minister behaves as if laws are for other people. Lord Frost is demanding that the EU rewrite aspects of the withdrawal treaty relating to Northern Ireland that Britain signed up to. And then The Economist, just like I have done with you, with so many other media outlets, then goes on to list all of the things that Johnson has done to weaken the British Constitution, to bring democracy into disrepute. You may have seen John Major, former Prime Minister,
yes,
talking a few days ago about all of this and his fury, really, about the way in which the country is being brought into disrepute. Johnson himself at the COP26 conference this week said, I really don't think Britain is a corrupt country. And it was noticeable that so many people made the obvious riposte right at that time, in which lots of people said, me included, no, Britain isn't a corrupt country, Mr. Johnson. You are, though. You and your government. There is a difference. And I think this is what is beginning to cut through. But we go back to that fundamental point, is that Johnson has been able to get away with all of this up until the last week. And he has gotten away with it, and it hasn't made a difference. You know, he is Prime Minister with an 80-seat majority, able to do all of these things because he has weakened the British Constitution, damaged the democratic system that is the UK. And what has made the difference in the last week? And critically, will it be sustained? There's a huge row going on in the Tory party backbench WhatsApp group between essentially the cohort of MPs that were the Red Wall MPs that have been elected really since 2010, and particularly in 2019, and the ones that came before. The ones that came before tend to be the Paterson supporters, the Red Wall type Tory that has been elected since then are worried about their more marginal seats and are worried about what this actually means. And you spoke about the five-hour cabinet meeting last night, and it should have been held somewhere else. They were due to go to Chequers to help to discuss all of this, particularly levelling up, yes. But decided, because a bunch of Tory grandees going off to their to the Prime Minister's country estate wouldn't look good in the current circumstances, so we're back to media management again, they decided to hold it in Downing Street. So they are clearly worried. And another piece of evidence that they are worried is that it just at the margins, it feels over the last 24 hours that Frost, Lord Frost, in the Northern yes. Ireland negotiations has backed off a little, just a little.
A little, but you were the first person to point out that I know of, that the usefulness of this row, and it's a serious matter with the European Union, is that in the event of trouble at home, and it's got a lot more troublesome since you passed the remark, there's nothing more useful than an enemy abroad to get people behind you. And in other words, to prolong and make worse the row over the Northern Ireland Protocol and Britain's threat to unilaterally stop enforcing it, which effectively means we will have to have a border on this island to protect the single market. That is a grave threat to the Good Friday Agreement and indeed to peace and security on this island, not to mention a massive economic threat.
Yeah. And it's interesting that both you and I have picked up on this very slight pulling back from the edge by Lord David Frost, and to ask the question, why is this happening? Now, we know going back all the way to Theresa May's Brexit Secretary of State, David Davis, there was a famous photograph of him turning up in Brussels to the early Brexit negotiations with Barnier on one side with the desk piled full of briefing papers.
Yes.
And Davis turning up basically with a smile and absolutely nothing else. He wasn't briefed. He wasn't on top of his brief. He didn't have any awareness of the details. And so it went on for years through successive Brexit secretaries, all the way through to effectively the current one, David Frost, different title, but essentially doing the same job that Davis did. And I wonder whether he is as on top of his brief as Davis was. That is, not very much. It's certainly the case that Johnson isn't, because as we know, Johnson doesn't do details and prides himself on not doing details. And I think what's happened is that they were very happy to have those picking a fight with the French type headlines going on and not much else. And because it's just, you know, it's headline management again, and nothing actually real is happening. Nobody's getting hurt, you know, and all of the stuff about Brexit harming people is being buried behind very dry trade statistics. And we know what Johnson thinks of business anyway. He's rather rude yes. about it. But in the last few days, it's become apparent, and if Johnson has picked up a newspaper or switched on the television or listened to somebody, one of his officials briefing him, he will have been told that the European Union is actually limbering up, A, to push back in a serious way. These are negotiations. Who knows? Might just be saber-rattling. But noises from Brussels are that if you trigger Article 16, this is what is going to happen next.
Yes.
With a whole series of things, always details from the European Union. But the key one being is that under the terms of the withdrawal agreement, they have to issue notice to tear it up, tear up something called the TCA, the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. And they have to give 12 months notice that they are going to do this. So that the vista of 2022, where the new but old timetable, clock ticking, starts again, so that at the end of 2022, at the end of this 12-month notice period, guess what? We're back to that world trade terms, hard, no-deal Brexit thing that yes. we thought we had confined to history, please God, we would all pray. But I think that would be the kind of headline that he wouldn't want, because he himself has used the phrase about Brexit, I think we've sucked that lemon dry. And I think that he knows that there's a point, that there's a difference between picking a fight with the French and having headlines in the Daily Express and Daily Mail about that is all good fun and gets him some votes and solidifies his base. But redoing the whole Brexit thing, I think that even Johnson would balk at that and it would say, well, just maybe that actually might lose me rather than gain me some votes. So I think they're having second thoughts. I don't think any decisions have been taken. They don't know whether Brussels is serious with this threat, but the threat has been made and I think it's prompted a little bit of a rethink.
And there is also a massive crisis in the National Health Service and a piece of video actually on Mail Online last night of a staff nurse ending her. She was crying about Sajid Javid's threat that anyone who wasn't vaccinated would have to stop working on the front line or in the care homes. And she was crying and she said words that are quite shocking. Will you give us a break, Boris, please? I mean, that kind of thing. And it's being reported now by the Telegraph, the Mail. These are the sort of the props, really, for any Tory government, aren't they? The media props.
Yes.
He can rely on, and the Express, for example, he could rely on in almost any circumstance imaginable.
Absolutely. And one of the things about the NHS is that I think that the Conservative government, or certainly large swathes of the Tory party's affection for the NHS is far more apparent than real. Johnson himself, Michael Gove, for example, plenty of them have got lots of history of saying that they don't particularly like the NHS, that they prefer a more private, a more insurance-based system. And this affection for the NHS is skin deep.
Yeah, don't even use it.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but the fact that it is being run into the ground, and it is no exaggeration to say that many bits of the NHS are stretched to the ultimate limit, and you know, the word collapse might be going too far, but I sense strongly that we're not too far away from it, not least because of the queues. If you want to get anything done, from seeing your GP through to having any kind of investigation, the wait times are extraordinary. And the ambulance services are crisis.
There are 5.8 million people on NHS waiting list. Now, I have to point out there are almost a million people on our waiting list here. So proportionately,
does it take 8 hours for an ambulance to arrive in a major city in Ireland these days?
No, it probably doesn't. But there are black spots in our services, in our health service here, that are shocking. And it behoves us not to get too deeply into that particular argument. But the question I really want to ask you, Chris, is about what Johnson has left going for him. He has an 88 seat majority. You can't lose that in one election, can you?
No, I think the electoral arithmetic still strongly favours him in the sense that if history is any guide, political history, electoral history is any guide, overturning that kind of majority in one fell swoop. It's not without precedent, but it is almost unprecedented. It would be it would be that cliched political earthquake if it was to be seriously under threat. But he could come in, even so, his own position within the party will be interesting, because if that majority was to be severely cut back and all of those new Labour, all of those new Red Wall MPs were to have their seats threatened, the possibility of insurrection within the party, I think, must be real. And the thing is about that cabinet meeting yesterday is that the next phase, or perhaps the final phase of this parliament, which is, as I said earlier, is probably we're about the halfway mark. He's got 2 years to deliver on his levelling up agenda.
Yes.
And he's not going to do it. The only way in which you can do it would be to just throw money at it in terms of making the long-term strategic structural changes to the nature of Britain. And its poorer regions. It's a multi-generation, not just a multi-year project. All countries try to do this, and not many succeed. And he's certainly not going to do it in 2 years. The only thing he can do in 2 years is throw money at it. And of course, that runs counter to what his chancellor is prepared to let him
indeed.
Do.
And Tory
reputation for fiscal responsibility in those circumstances would go out of the window. And so that speaks to another constituency that he's going to offend. So he's got an incredibly difficult juggling act to perform over the next couple of years. And I think that, you know, the sleaze isn't going to help, but it's the agenda also that even if we didn't have this stuff going on about how, they're now going after Tory MPs that claim rent on their London flats, which they don't actually rent out. And all this kind of stuff is still ongoing. If you've got a spare £3 million, Eamon, you could probably become Lord Dunphy of Ranelagh. I suspect it's been suggested many times that the right, you know, let's put all of this out in the open now and just put a rate card. £3 million will get you a peerage. You'll be Lord. A couple of million will get you a knighthood. If you want an OBE or an MBE, £100,000. All of this is there. There's it's how much stuff actually comes out of the woodwork, and the conservative carousel, it's being called, of money, in which the companies that benefited from pandemic health contracts are now having made tons of money. But enterprising journalists, having been alerted by this sleaze of the last few weeks, are now noticing and publishing names of companies that are now donating even more money to the Conservative Party, having made the money during the pandemic. All this stuff. Will it make a difference? I think it has to. I think if anything means anything, this sort of stuff must be meaningful. But at the moment, the idea that this could actually cause that 80-seat majority to be overturned, I think that would be a stretch too far. I think even Keir Starmer would say overturning that majority is a too general election project.
Right. Just let me ask you a final question, and it's a subject really for another conversation, Chris. The economic effects and hurt to British business of Brexit is there, isn't it? And it's beginning to be felt.
Very, very much so. And you can see it in various official publications from the Bank of England recently. Their decision not to raise interest rates was no small part due to the fact that the economy is being hurt by Brexit. So in a way, the Brexit is like an interest rate hike, if you like, in terms
of business, which is the Tories' natural constituency. Business, small business, is really feeling it as well.
So anybody involved in trying to export is hurting, and it's there in the trade statistics. As I say, they're very dry statistics, and I can quote all sorts of numbers of billions at you in terms of the exports that have been damaged. The sheer number of customs declarations, they run into the tens of millions now that firms have to fill out, the forms, the bureaucracy. It's throwing sands in the wheels of business. And, you know, that's a very strange thing for the Conservative Party to do. It's a very, very counter to everything that they've ever stood for. Margaret Thatcher, the creator of the single market, would be turning in her grave.
Okay, Chris, we're very grateful to you for joining us. That's Chris Johns. And we thank Chris, as always. Thanks to you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.